Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The Taoiseach Micheál Martin is to bring forward proposals on a consultative forum on Ireland's foreign policy, including neutrality. It's expected this will be chaired by an expert or an academic. It will hear from international figures in an overall discussion about foreign and defence policy. One source told RTE's Europe editor Tony Connolly that the forum will not focus exclusively on what they described as a binary discussion about neutrality. For more on this, I'm joined now by James Law, Fianna Fáil TD and member of the Oireachtas Foreign Affairs Committee, and also Sinn Féin's Foreign Affairs and Defence spokesperson John Brady TD. And thank you for joining us this morning, both of you. James Lawless, to you first. Your party leader has decided it's time for a discussion about this, but the very concept of neutrality, that was something brought about by your own party founder Eamon de Valera. This would be a huge shift, would it not, for Fianna Fáil and for the country?
Good morning, Claire. So the world is changing and very few things stay the same. And I think that source you mentioned at the top of the piece about it's not a binary decision is very correct and wise. We're in a complex hybrid world. And the old idea of paratroopers jumping out of a plane into the Wicklow Mountains, or indeed Irish forces being deployed and straight into battle and tanks and conventional warfare, is quite antiquated and quite outdated. And we have a number of threats to Irish sovereignty, Irish economic interest. We have 40% of the EU's data sets housed in Ireland. We have telecoms cables going under the Atlantic that connect to effectively Europe and the US and North America. We have maritime activity. We have the energy. We have seven times the offshore footprint than we do the landmass. So we have seven times the equivalent of Ireland that we control in our maritime territories, which is now going to be used for energy and offshore wind and all the rest of it, which is extremely important and critical to our national infrastructure.
So where does all of that take you? Where does all of that take you with our neutrality?
So the first thing is we need to understand that the threats that we see today are of a new and complex kind. So 40% of attacks on security infrastructure, IT systems, are coming from hostile state actors. We saw the HC taken down during the pandemic. We also know North Korea and a number of other rogue states engage in this kind of behaviour. We see, for example, the Russian embassy in Dublin. The footprint that the Russian embassy controls is way disproportionate to its activity in Ireland, even before the war in Ukraine. So I suppose we have to obviously make a decision. Are we going to? And I suppose the most important thing is, our neutrality has always been a kind of a political decision. It's not something that has actually been manifested in reality, though. So in reality, and an Oireachtas committee in 2016, 7 years ago, even before any of the recent developments, said that we should have a conversation because what actually happens, for example, when the RAF are called in to defend Irish airspace, when we look for overseas aid, when there's maritime activity off our coast, when there's telecoms going either in the skies and satellites or under water, when we look on the Five Eyes Western intelligence agencies to help us police that, that's not really being useful.
Yeah, you've outlined all of the problems and the increased threats that we're facing. Where does that leave us when it comes to neutrality, do you think? Do we need to change our policy now?
So I think we need to look at what our policy is in reality, as opposed to what our policy might be in some ideological, historical space. And just since you mentioned my party founder, De Valera, and indeed Lamass, Dev adopted neutrality as a practical, pragmatic stance for a fledgling independent state. The fear at the time was we would be dragged as a dominion in the early Free State into sort of British period of war, so we wanted to stand apart from that. But Dev actually in 1945 said it was unrealistic to think that small states could opt out of their collective security options. And Lamass, when we joined the European Union, very clearly said, I expect this will lead ultimately to a common defence pact. Now, I want to be really clear, Claire, this does not mean Irish recruits being conscripted and set across to fight in foreign wars. What it does mean, though, and we're doing this already at the level of ambition number two, which we've done with the defence forces, it means boosting our defence forces, it means making them, and I had engaged with the Chief of Staff who was in with our Defence Committee only last week, it means making them capable for hybrid warfare, for cyber security, for telecoms, for maritime engagements, and across the whole spectrum of complex threats to the current members.
So,
what is a sovereign state today?
Just to be clear, are you saying, James, we're not neutral? We might as well officially admit that.
Well, we're certainly not politically neutral, and we never have been. And the engagements that we have and the services that we actually enjoy and the protection that we avail of from other countries would not make us neutral on any objective analysis.
Okay,
but we have sort of kept up what I think is a bit of a pretense.
Okay, let's bring in John Brady on this now. So, John, what do you say to that? That our neutrality, as we present it and as we believe it to be, is a bit of a pretense, really. We're not neutral. We're certainly not politically neutral, according to James.
Well, we may not be politically neutral, but we are militarily neutral. We're militarily non-aligned. And I think given this announcement last week by the Taoiseach, you know, I welcome any discussion around neutrality, but I think it should be taken in the context of a referendum, which would offer a real platform for real debate and have a look at the whole issue of neutrality. I firmly believe in Ireland's military neutrality, and I think it should be inserted into our constitution. And I think that would form the best debate with an end result of having a referendum.
So what's your
constitution.
What's your problem with a consultative forum, which is what Micheál Martin has announced?
Well, look, I mean, I'd like to hear from the Taoiseach. I mean, we've seen a lot of kite flying over the last year with regard to, you know, dropping the triple lock mechanism. We've had a lot of rhetoric about having a citizens' assembly. Now, what we hear is an alternative format. We've yet to see what that actually entails. We've yet to see the terms of reference. We've yet to see who these experts are. So, you know, I can understand how the Taoiseach and why the government would have concerns about holding a referendum. But I have real concerns here that, you know, this could well be by an attempt by government to try shift public opinion by stacking the debate in favour of abandoning Irish neutrality. Something.
Are you saying that you wouldn't trust the government to choose the experts who will be on this forum?
Well, no. Look, I mean, there has been a clear attempt over the last number of decades to erode military neutrality, signing up to PESCO, signing up to EU battle groups. We have, you know, both the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach over the course of the last year saying the one protection that was secured by the Irish people, you know, following the failure to pass Nice 1 was the protection that was put there around neutrality, you know, the triple lock mechanism. So we have, you know, government saying over the last year they want to drop the triple lock mechanism. But the important point here, and to touch on something that James said there about neutrality and sovereignty, the biggest threat to Irish sovereignty is the Irish government itself, and the failure to actually deal with the massive recruitment and retention issue within the Irish Defence Forces, where we have an establishment figure of 9,500, and yet now that currently membership of our Defence Forces is below 7,900, when we have ships tied up in Hal Boland, unable to go to sea to protect the very assets that James talks about. You know, the data cables, our critical infrastructure, our, you know, our massive assets, our fisheries. We cannot protect what we have because of the failure of Irish government. So rather than having a debate around, you know, further EU militarisation or anything like that, we need to protect our own sovereignty, invest in our defence forces. And that means investing to protect our neutrality.
All right. I just want to come back, James, to a couple of points that John made there. On this forum, this consultative forum, what do you say to that argument that the government might stack the debate in favour of abandoning neutrality?
Well, look, I think the government has to, I suppose, be an honest broker on this and facilitate the discussion. And, you know, I think it's doing that. But it also has a mandate. You know, it's elected to serve and represent the people and to advance positions. So it's perfectly entitled to put forward, I suppose, views of its own as part of that discussion. But in terms of, you know, I think any forum would have to be include a wide spectrum. But I think it's...
Why not have a citizens' assembly?
Well, that may come later. You know, there are many difficult decisions that Irish society faces. I will give you an example, the drugs decriminalisation debate, which we're having at the moment. I chaired a debate on it to the Justice Committee over the course of last year. We produced a report, 22 recommendations, expert-led evidence, wide engagement, and that is now going to Citizens' Assembly as one of the inputs chaired by Paul Reid. So, you know, if we look at the Eighth Amendment debate, which we had a few years ago, there was an expert report, medics, lawyers and various professionals in the fields that were relevant put together a report. That then informed a special parliamentary committee that was established within the electorates. So there are many ways can go on this. But just the point about a referendum, it's possible that at the end of this, a referendum could be proposed, or even a series of referendums that are related. But I think we shouldn't jump straight to that as the first point. And just to kind of give an example of how that can go wrong, often we know in Irish political history, referenda are about everything except what they're supposed to be about. But right now, and John mentioned the Nice Treaty, and of course Sinn Féin opposed every single European Union treaty up until the very last one, I think. But in terms of the Nice Treaty, as a result of opposition to the Nice Treaty, we inserted an amendment to the Constitution that says we cannot join an EU defence force without going to the people. But we could join NATO. So I think it's a little bit perverse to say that we are constrained within the Constitution as to European collaboration, but there's no such check on NATO. And I think it would make probably make more sense and be more attractive to the Irish people that we might align with our European friends and neighbours and other member states. And yet, the way we set about that, because of the, I suppose, singular focus of that debate at the time of the Nice Treaty, was to look at European integration and ignore maybe wider pictures. So, look, I think in reality, we do need to collaborate. I'm speaking to you this morning from Sweden. I'm at a Europol conference talking about how member states and justice committees around the different member states are all represented here, how we can collaborate on law enforcement, on public prosecutions, on criminal gangs and organised crime. Why would we not collaborate in the same way on defending critical infrastructure, like the submarine cable, okay, like cybersecurity, yeah, and it attracts to our values, things like liberal democracy,
so John,
free, fair elections?
John, I have a number of messages coming in on this, and one says, Ireland is Europe's back door, we're wide open. Only last summer the Russians were planning naval exercises off our west coast. We should be in NATO, says this listener, and every other European defence pact. What do you say to that argument?
Well, look, I mean, that argument about joining NATO, and James, listening to what James is saying there, I think he's advocating an EU army. Essentially, that's what it sounds like. And he talks about the protection in our constitution, which is wholly inadequate because, you know, the Article 29 that's in our constitution talks about adopting a decision not to be part of a common defence, mechanism within the EU. No government, and you know, immediately dropped that, signed us up to PESCO, which sees a common defence body in place now. So the protection that is there is no protection whatsoever. What we need to see is Ireland, you know, strengthen a strategy of active neutrality, which I think has stood to us well over many, many years and built us up a reputation right across the world, and was, you know, instrumental in us winning our seat on the Security Council. And at a time where, you know, there is an increasing polarised world, I think the role of, you know, neutral, non-aligned nations is going to be more critical in the future, given the impacts of escalating tensions between major military alliances. And the fact that Ireland, as a colonised country, one that has come through conflict, has a reputation and so much to bring in terms of, you know, a counterweight to the shifting militarisation, not just happening within the EU, but globally as well. And, you know, okay, if we are committed to neutrality, I think having a referendum, that is the most appropriate platform for debate.
But John, James says you could get there. You could go from this consultative expert forum to a citizens' assembly to a referendum. And wouldn't that be a more careful way to do it than to jump straight to the referendum point?
Well, look, I mean, we're talking about a situation here. These so-called experts, the real experts we need to listen to are the Irish people who, you know, have...
Well, what
very,
do you mean
so,
so-called
views.
Experts? Like, we don't even know who these people are yet.
Well, exactly.
But you're making an assumption.
You know, this...
You're making an assumption. I'm not sure what it is, that they're bogus or they're going to...
Yeah, sorry, I just reminded of Michael Gove telling us during Brexit that we've had enough of experts to listen to John Brady there. And look, I think John has to prove my point for me.
Well, the real experts here are the Irish people, and I'm not sure why Fianna Fáil would be afraid of having a referendum.
Well, that's what Michael Gove
in the Constitution
said as well.
The Irish people have made their views consistently known about neutrality, so much so that we have safeguards built in following these two.
Okay, so if we look at the Article 29 that John mentioned, that's an example, I think, of how not to do this. So because of, I suppose, political reaction to the first Nice Treaty, which was around a wide range of issues, including the fact that there was possibly going to be a federal Europe, etc. at that time, we ended up embracing a new article in the Constitution, very specific, only focused on one particular outcome of an EU defence alignment, and we actually forgot about or missed the whole bigger picture of NATO and other alliances that might emerge. So I think that really when you're amending the Constitution, it's supposed to be a framework document at a very high level. It's not supposed to be putting in ifs and buts and nots around very specific potential outcomes of a point in time. That's why we need to get this right. We need to step back from it, we need to have an expert engagement, possibly leading into either a citizens' assembly or some other deliberative process. Now, I do believe that the type of engagement that the Tá Ionadh is considering would involve local meetings, perhaps a regional meetings around the country, so there would be public participation. It wouldn't just be those experts. There wouldn't be a report in the back room. It would actually, there might be some element of a roadshow involved.
Yeah, John seems not to trust the government to appoint these experts on the forum.
Claire, we've very good reason not to trust the Irish government. When we have Micheál Martin last year saying we don't need a referendum to join NATO, when we have, you know, James, can I make this point? Both saying that, you know, the one protection that we have there, the triple lock mechanism, that it's no longer fit for purpose. And, you know, the fact that the triple lock was first introduced as a concession to the will of the Irish people by Fianna Fáil in government, you know, to try to convince them to overturn, you know, the first Nice treaty failure. And now we have government saying, look, it's not fit for purpose. So the one protection that we have, they're looking at changing. So I have very good reason not to trust the government with regard to this when, you know, we're withdrawn from peacekeeping missions in the Golan Heights, only to, you know, use those members of the Defence Force to be involved in an EU battle group. Mm-hmm. So I think not just me, but the Irish people have very, very strong reason not to trust the Irish government with a view of moving towards greater militarisation and involvement in the EU.
So, John, Sinn Féin, like, what would Sinn Féin in government do about this? You clearly want to maintain neutrality, but what would you do when it comes to, for example, security around our undersea cables?
Well, look, I mean, first and foremost, we need to invest in our defence forces. We need to stop the hemorrhaging of members of the defence forces, and that can be done with the full implementation of the Work and Time Directive. Build it up to the establishment number of 9,500. We're committed to the full implementation and move towards level of ambition 2 with regard to the Commission on the Future of Defence Forces. And that means investing in neutrality, investing in our defence forces to ensure that we're not reliant on, you know, the EU to come in and police our waters. That means, you know, giving the Irish Defence Forces the capabilities, you know, to protect our sovereignty. But we need to ensure that, you know, as I stated, you know, in this increasingly polarised world, Ireland, you know, build on our active neutrality, non-nuclear proliferation, and you know, be a voice for peace right across the world, and particularly where, you know, we see particularly in the global south now, where, you know, there is no trust of Western values. There is a greater move in, you know, African countries, for example, to move towards, you know, China and Russia. And I think Ireland has a key role as a non-colonised country to go in there where we have the trust in many regions, such as that, as an honest broker. John, we need to build on that.
We're going to leave that one there. John Brady, Sinn Féin, and James Lawless. Very briefly.
Can I just finish on one? John is saying you can't trust the Irish government. Everything the Irish government says is on record on public websites. Sinn Féin deleted thousands of press statements off their website as soon as the Russian invasion happened. So let's not talk about trust here. We're going to talk about trust.
Well, I think the real arbitrators are the Irish people, and they know who to trust on this issue.
Okay.
It's certainly not the Irish.
Well, all right, got to leave it there. James Lawless and John Brady, thank you both very much. Coming up next, the top secret intelligence operation that led to the peace process.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.